welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 211. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Melinda Innes. Welcome, Melinda.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. It's our pleasure. Melinda, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Yes, I am.
Alrighty, we want to hear the whole story. Melinda Innes is board chair of Gun Sense Georgia, which advocates for common sense policies that assure public safety and reduce gun violence, and is the executive director of Family Connection Glenn County, a collaborative that works to advocate for children and families. Prior to that, she was the executive director of Georgia's Win List, a political action committee for women candidates. Melinda's earlier career was as a senior-level marketing executive for several corporations and advertising agencies. Melinda, that's a pithy summary of your career to date. Tell us what you're engaged in now that has you excited.
Well, right now, as you mentioned, Don, my primary role is the last few years has been involved in advocacy. I started with a couple of other folks, Gun Sense Georgia, which advocate for sensible gun laws. And I got involved in that 3 years ago, and we can get 3 or 4 years ago. Again, it was in part a reaction to something that had happened that was very devastating to me. But I realized I had to channel my passion and my energy into something that was meaningful to me. And Sandy Hook had just happened as well. And so I just thought it was like a perfect storm of things that said, I've got to do something to make a difference, and this is something I really care about and I want to change. And everything else after that kind of led to the next thing, that my advocacy work as a volunteer lobbyist and forming a 501c3 led to my work with Georgia's Win List, in which I worked to change the legislative body, where there are only 20% women in the Georgia legislature. And
forgive me, what does WIN stand for?
Women in numbers.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, and so basically, and I won't belabor this, but only women are 51% of the state of Georgia, and the only 20% representation in the General Assembly, and no representation at the federal level. And so, you know, women's voices are unique, but also come at things from a different perspective, and we need to be represented. And to me, these are all part of the same issue. The reason we have so much gun violence is most of the people in my group are women, by the way, nothing against men.
Sure.
We also have men in my group, but women kind of view the world a little bit differently. And so those two perspectives together are what make the world run. So if you only have the one perspective all the time, just the male perspective, that's not a good balance.
Not even close to a good balance.
So that work led to where I am now. And where I am now is I took a position as executive director of Family Connection. Family Connection is a collaborative body of partners who work to improve conditions and life for each community in the state of Georgia. There's one in every county. And we work with all the nonprofits, but we also bring in the business community to try and look at issues of poverty and for the underserved community that we can change. For instance, real quickly, transportation is a huge issue. There's no transportation system in Glenn County. People can't get to jobs. They can't get to services. And for low-income people, access is a huge problem.
Yes.
So that's what I work on in my everyday life. But the Gun Sense Georgia, I'm still working on that as part of the 501c3. I'm chairman of the board of Gun Sense. And, of course, we're gearing up for the legislative session that's coming up in January. I think the session starts January 12th or 13th. I can't remember exactly. But there are several active bills. There are two active gun bills that are very dangerous that could come up in the session. One is campus carry, allowing people to carry guns on college campuses.
Good Lord. And
in classrooms, dorms, frat parties, et cetera. And the other bill is what the gun lobby calls constitutional carry, which simply means you don't have to get a permit to carry a concealed weapon if that were to pass. So those are two bills, and we're gearing up for that right now. So
thank goodness. Thank goodness that you're on the front of this. Has the shift happened? You say women are 51% in Georgia, 20% in the General Assembly. Are those numbers improving?
They're pretty static, Don. I mean, they were worse. I think when WIN started, I want to say 15 years ago, the numbers were certainly worse. The last few years, they've kind of, like I said, hovered around the same. Certainly at the federal level, Michelle Nunn made a run for office. but that was not successful. So again, the concern I have is that men and women are, like I said, approach things, have a different emotional sense and even intellectual sense. Certainly we're equals, but we just approach things from a different perspective. So that perspective is not being represented in the state of Georgia or in the country for that matter, where, you know, there 50% of the people in this country are women.
Yes, yes.
So we're behind on that issue. And I still feel that a lot of these other things that we're talking about would change if that other half of the population were more involved. So
I couldn't be more behind you.
Right. Great.
I couldn't be more behind you. Well, as you know, as we've talked about, everyone's life journey is composed of a series of turning points. Some call them passages. And at these times, we're each faced with obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine the course of our lives for the next 5 or 6 years. So take us back as far as you'd like to in your story and tell us what some of the more memorable turning points, people and events are in your life that shaped the life of Melinda Ennis.
Well, you know,
don't be modest.
Well, I started out, and I think a lot of kids coming out of college, you know, you go to college, you're not sure what you want to do. I always thought I'd be a writer, you know, so I gravitated to journalism. My father, and I think this was an influence too, my father was a creative writing major who ended up being a salesman all his life. Nothing wrong with that, you know, but I always wonder, I mean, he's a good writer. My father's 87 years old, and he still writes short stories.
Oh, I love that. So you grew up with a writer father who encouraged you to read and write, right?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. We discussed books and all of that. So that was important to my life. And so I was a journalism major. I married a journalist. And I always joke that two out of my favorite movies are about journalists.
What are they?
One of them is Roman Holiday with Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn.
Right.
And the other is All the President's Men.
Cool. So
anyway, I ended up majored in journalism. And then I had a double major. My second major was film because I also grew up loving films. And that was part of my family's whole thing. We all watched and talked about films together. And so I ended up, you know, when I got out of college, getting a job at an ad agency, because that's kind of what you did back in the day. This is in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of creative people kind of gravitated to the advertising marketing world. And so that's kind of where I ended up. I got a job at an ad agency. And I think with a lot of people, you know, unless you're a doctor and you're on a very linear path or a lawyer, my son's now a lawyer, you get out and you're like, okay, how does this job fit with what I want to do? And so, you know, like I said, back in the day, that marketing and advertising jobs was kind of where it was. But I never, as a little girl, thought, oh, I want to grow up and work in an ad agency.
Right.
Just wasn't there.
Was the journalism working for a publication, a newspaper, a magazine, was that in the mix?
Yeah, I thought about it, but quite honestly, I mean, it's one of these things where I got a job at an ad agency.
So that's what you did.
So that's what I did. And I always kept my hand in writing. I always did freelance writing. Throughout my life, I've done that. So I just ended up, and I think this happens with a lot of kids. Oh, you get the job, and then you kind of follow that path.
Right.
And then moving ahead, because I know we've got a time issue, but, you know, I quickly started finding success. I mean, I was pretty successful. I moved up the ladder. I got bigger and better jobs. I started with a company.
Were you on the account side or the creative side?
I was on the account side. I was on the account services side, but then I flipped to the corporate side. Okay. And got a job with Arby's Inc., which was headquartered in Atlanta, and I'd already been at an ad agency. And so I came in as a field marketing manager, and I was traveling, and then I kept getting promoted. I kept getting more money, more promotion, more money, more promotion. And I was there for 10 years.
Oh,
and so I ended up, when I left, I was the senior vice president up there, and I really loved it. Or when I say I loved it, I loved the life it was giving me. You know, my husband was a journalist. Frankly, I was the breadwinner at that point, because I was in the corporate world and I was the one making a lot of money, which afforded us the ability to travel and do a lot of things that we loved. But that also becomes a trap. I had my son when I was in my mid-20s. I had my first son. And of course, I'm from a generation of, my mother was a homemaker, so that was conflicting for me to have to travel all the time and leave my son. So I always felt torn. Mm-hmm. I wasn't totally happy, and I didn't feel like I was on the path I was really meant to be on, but I was successful, and if you judge success in terms of money,
right,
and position.
Right.
So that's the way you measure success. I was successful. And so that went on until you know, and I left Arby's and I went to the agency side, and I thought that was going to be really creative and interesting, and it was more of the same. Mm-hmm. So around that time, I had my second son. They were 9 years apart. And when I had my second son, that was another big kind of transition, because I said, wow, I miss so much with my first son. And that was from a selfish perspective. I felt like I missed. He's a wonderful young man. I don't think he missed. I think I missed.
Okay.
So I wanted to spend more time with my second son. So around that time, my husband had an opportunity to go for a job that would be in England.
Okay.
He was bureau chief for Cox newspapers in England.
Okay, wow.
And so I encouraged him to go for it. And it was one of those things where we started out going, well, he might. Well, this might happen, but it's a long shot, until, because he was one of about 200 or 300 candidates. And it allowed me to, I still did part-time work, because this was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so the internet was coming on. I was doing part-time stuff with clients I'd had in America on the internet, but I was still at home with my son and we were traveling and it was great. And I thought, okay, this is the hiatus I need. I'm more mommy focused now, less career focused, but I'll be ready to get back to it after I get this out of my system.
Mm-hmm.
So then when we moved back to America.
So how long were you in the UK?
About 3.5 years.
Did you like it a lot?
We loved it. We loved it. And my kids, we really tried to, I mean, of course, living in the UK is not like living in, you know, Mozambique. And of course, we're very lucky that this happened. But for kids to see other cultures and other lifestyles and see America from a different perspective.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the other really incredible thing about it. And I was able to spend a lot of time, more time with my sons. One was becoming a teenager and the other one was little bitty. And that was fun. But we had promised my older son that we'd go back after 3.5 years because he wanted to finish high school in America. Okay. And so we came back. And so I thought, well, good, that's out of my system. I went right back into where I was before with a big marketing job, with a big salary and an expense account, and car allowance and all that kind of stuff.
How did that work for you?
Well, it didn't. I was very unhappy. By this point, I had been doing this my whole career, and it was like the old Peggy Lee song, This Will Date Me. Kind of like, is that all there is? You know,
right. Is
this really what I want to do with the rest of my life? And then the next big transition was a really, really good friend of mine, one of my best friends that I've known since before my husband, he introduced me to my husband, became ill with a really terrible disease. And because he was a single gay man, I was one of his best friends. So he didn't have a partner at the time. So I became a part-time caregiver for him. I mean, mm-hmm. I really was there all the time, as was his ex-wife, by the way. So, because we were all old friends, but it was a horrendous illness and it was a slow decline. And the thing that kept going through my head, other than watching this sadness, was he had saved. He was a big saver. He'd saved all his money. He had a great, fabulous car, a really nice house, but he didn't travel because he never had time because of business. And he really didn't do the things that he kept saying he would do someday. Mm-hmm. And the thing we have to remember is someday could be tomorrow.
Yes.
We just don't know when the end is going to be here. And that doesn't mean you have to go off and take a trip to Europe all the time, but it does mean that you have to think about, what is the saying, live every day as if it's your last, mm-hmm. and plan as if you're going to live forever. And so that's kind of my philosophy. The planning part being always having something that you're focused on and excited about. But my point is, so watching my friend, and then, or like I said, around that time, I was still unfulfilled. I was working. I had a client who was a nightmare. And so I just thought, I don't have the energy or the inclination anymore to argue over really petty things, you know, that don't really make a difference to anybody. Selling these products don't really make a difference. And I'm not putting that down, by the way. It's just, that's the way I personally felt.
Sure.
This was not something that was fulfilling me, helping people sell products. And so it was just like, I've got to do something. So my husband and I had this really long talk. And this is another thing. I feel lucky because we were in a financial position where we could do this. Some people aren't. But it also meant a lifestyle change, because I just said to my husband, I can't continue to work for a big paycheck anymore. I've got to do something else. And my husband had always loved his work, always been fulfilled. And so that's another thing. I was kind of jealous of that. I was always almost resentful sometimes that he loved his work and I was doing stuff just for money. Mm-hmm. Or so I had built that up in my head. So I've always been very political. I've always been very passionate about things and always been on boards and things like that. But around that time, the Sandy Hook tragedy happened. And I said to my husband, I'm going to pick a cause that I believe in and that I'm going to work for maybe, you know, for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was the gun violence. It was, and the more, as people who in the movement say, the more you find out about it, the more you have to work on it because, mm-hmm. you know, the numbers and statistics and everything about it are so overwhelming. And especially having lived in another country and seen, I mean, real quick story, when my little boy, he was four, started school in England, and he was the only American at his little school. And this little boy next to him, they were supposed to share a locker. And I said, this is my son. You know, he's from America. And the little boy said, my daddy won't let me play with Americans because they all have guns.
Wow.
Wow. And so, you know, the gun culture, we live there. We've still got lots of friends over there. And this has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with it's incomprehensible to people in other parts of the world. And that there's so many guns here and that we continue to do nothing about it or we don't seek solutions or anything else. We don't even allow research to be research dollars to be spent.
Yeah, I just saw some statistics the other day on the low levels of deaths by guns in England. It's incredibly low.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're in Japan. You are more likely to be struck by lightning than be killed by a gun. So the numbers are overwhelming. And the premise that more guns makes us safer is ludicrous because we have more guns and we're not safer. Right. So something has to change. And so every cultural shift starts with just a small group of people putting one foot in front of the other, trying to make a difference. And to that point, my favorite quote in the world is by Margaret Mead. And let me hope I get this right. It's something along the lines of, don't ever doubt that, you know, a small group of people can make a massive change. Indeed, that's the only thing that ever has.
Yes, that's a perfect quote. Well, let's take that quote as a placeholder here for a second and go to the issue of the story is just incredible. Thank you for sharing. Let's go to the issue of why the majority of people, according to decades of studies, are not in their sweet spot. You spent a whole bunch of your career in your sweet spot. You had ins and outs, and now maybe you're in your sweetest spot of all. But
oh yeah,
what is it that, and your husband was in his sweet spot the whole time.
Yes.
So pretty much. So, but why is it that 80-some% of people around the world and 70, high 70 percentiles in this country, when they're asked, are you using your talents, or are you using your skills to do work you do every day, answer no. What do you think that's about? How do people get off track, and what happens to them?
Well, I think you need to think about living a purposeful life. And I know that sounds trite, but I think when you're young, of course, you think you're going to, you know, you're thinking you could live forever. Of course, you're not thinking about the long term as much. And I think, you know, money is a trap too. People right. get into a lifestyle. I mean, I worked for one company that encouraged that. I mean, basically they encouraged you to, it's a longer story than this, but they really wanted people to have the big house, you know, the big car and all these things that get you in that trap. And so all of a sudden you think you have to have those things. And as a really dear friend of mine says, there's a huge difference between what you need and what you want. Mm-hmm. And when you start understanding that, everything changes. I mean, what you need is happiness in your life, and happiness does not come, it's been proven so many times, through material things. And if you're always chasing that, then you're never really going to be happy. And then I think also, I always had this little nagging voice that was telling me, you know, you're not really doing what you're supposed to do. And I was good at what I did. And don't get me wrong, I had fun, as I said, but I didn't want it on my tombstone. You know, I didn't want to leave this planet thinking, okay, I sold a bunch of products for people. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not diminishing that, but for me and my personality and what I want out of life, that wasn't enough. I just want to feel like I made some kind of difference, or at least I tried to make a difference in changing the bad things that were here when I arrived on the planet.
So what would you say to listeners out there, whether they're early on in their career, whether they're students, there might be plenty of students out there listening, or they're, you know, pre-retirement and have a chance now to break away if they've planned well. What would you say to them about how to find that purpose?
Well, I think we all have that little inner voice that you really need to listen to. By the way, sometimes you don't find out what you really were meant for right away. I mean, you know, people find that at different times. My story, like I said, I don't regret my life. I'm not saying, oh, wow, I had a wasted life. I've had a great life, but I've never been happier doing the things that listening to that voice that this is really what I was meant to do. And not trying to be something that I wasn't. I was always in the business world. I always felt like I was the square peg in a round hole. Even though I was successful and I had the game face and all of that, it made me very unhappy. I had anger issues because inside I was really angry with myself. Mm-hmm. You know. So with young people, I would say be very intentional about what you want to do. You know, try and find your joy, try and find your happiness. Don't make it be about a paycheck. Now, and then, you know, and I also work with a lot of people who have no choices, you know,
yes.
by the way.
Yes.
People who are born into poverty and they don't see anything else. They're not exposed to any other opportunities in life. So especially for those of us who are, and I consider myself, I was born into a middle-class family in America, late mid-century. And I mean, I am incredibly grateful for that because my life to me is blessed in so many ways because I had these choices. A lot of people don't.
Right.
So if you have those choices, don't abuse those choices. Really be careful and planful about the choices you make and think about the consequences. Do you really need to have this $80,000 car or whatever, you know, that's going to get you into a position that you're paying it off and then, oh, you've got to have the next car.
Right.
I mean, how much do you, you know, back to my friend who said, is this something you want or something you need?
Right.
And try and evaluate your choices on that basis.
And where do you really want to be? I mean, having an $80,000
right.
car is great, but what if
right.
you invested that money over the next 10 or 15 years and that would give you freedom to experiment and do a whole lot of other things?
Right.
And who cares about the car? So
right.
what do you think would have been, whether it's early, mid, or late career, what have been the palpable benefits to you of really facing that anger, making choices and changes, and doing what you care about more than not? What have been the most palpable positive benefits in your life?
Oh, I'm more peaceful. I am so much less angry. In fact, I don't have anger anymore. Like I said, I'm grateful. I feel blessed. Like I said, peaceful. Don't underrate peacefulness, folks. I mean, that inner peace, so much of your life you spend churning and burning, and to reach a place where you just feel grateful to be alive and, you know, happy and appreciate. And again, this all sounds very corny, but it's true.
I don't think it sounds corny at all.
It's so true that there's nothing more than an inner peace, that you're happy with your life and you're happy with the choices that you're on now. And I'm so happy with the path I'm on now. It's probably the path I meant to be on a long time ago, but you know what? I had to make that other journey to get here, so I don't regret that.
Yes, well said. I think that's exactly right. We do what we can. So how would you just boil down in a couple of minutes, just a couple of distinct lessons that you would share as far as somebody, wherever they are in their career, being able to find that purpose and act on it? What would you just say? Just a few ideas.
Well, like I said, I think you have to trust your heart and not just go with what the logical path might be, or, you know, I think you listen to your heart. You know, I think it really does speak to you if you'll listen. And that's another thing, listen. You know, you spend so much of your youth in particular talking and, like I said, churning and moving and energy, and there's not enough of that reflection time because, you know, young people are under tremendous pressure to make the grades and succeed, and any successful person. That's hard. We put all those pressures on young people to succeed, but then think about what success means to you.
Yes.
And success is not the same for everybody.
No.
Success is a very personal thing. Success is money. You know, hey, what? If success is money for you and that makes you happy, then fine. But it wasn't for me. So you've got to find out what that success means.
Yes, exactly. I think that reflection time, especially in a world that's so, I think the internet's the greatest invention of mankind. I really do. I love it. I'm glad I lived to see it. But the downside is we stay in our heads. We stay texting and tweeting and working and Facebooking and all to the exclusion of just simple, quiet time.
Right.
You can't trust those instincts and listen to your heart if you don't have that quiet time. It's simply not going to happen.
No, you can't. you can't. And in my case, my quiet times of inner reflection, like I said, as I sat with my friend holding his hand, I had so much inner reflection on the lives we'd had together, our journey as friends, and then where I wanted to go from here. That's so important because, and that was forced on me because I'm a real high energy person. So I'm not the type, you know, I'm an active go, go, go kind of person. So that was hard for me, but don't underestimate it. It's huge.
Books, briefly, just a couple of books that have been important to you, or film. You like film. I like film a lot. Mission books or film?
Well, I just saw a fabulous film that's about the very things we're talking about, The Path Not Taken and The Path Taken, a film called Brooklyn. Have you seen it?
No.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And it's a superficially a very simple story about a woman coming of an age. She's an Irish immigrant who comes to America, and then she's faced with this incredible choice, life choice. And, you know, you agonize with her in the film. I mean, you know, it's just palpable. And, you know, she ends up, you know, making a choice. I won't tell you for those right. movie, but it has really impacted me because that's what it's about. The road not taken and the road taken. And, right. you know, at the end of the day, we could live different lives. I could have gone down one path and had a totally different life. The key is once you've chosen a path, you know, make sure it's a path that you're happy with and that you feel get joy from and that will energize you and move you forward. And if you don't feel all those things, then it's the wrong path.
Exactly. Exactly. Trusting your gut, trusting your instincts is one of the key.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I don't read a lot of self-help books. I read a lot of nonfiction and fiction, but that one came to mind because it was really about, and she's making a choice, not about career, but just about a whole life. Does she go back to Ireland or does she stay in America? And right. if you see it, you'll see that it's a very poignant kind of story that's metaphorical for choices we all make.
I love that. Is it a new film that's released yes. this year?
Yes, it's just released. This is how great it is. It's 98% on Rotten Tomatoes with critics. I mean, it is
it's really,
but it's superficially a very sweet story, but it's got a lot of depth.
Who are the actors?
The main actress is, I'm going to mispronounce her name because it's an Irish name, Cerise Ronan. She was in Atonement. Did you see Atonement?
No.
Okay, she was the little girl in Atonement. She's now a grown woman. But most of the actors are people you would, I mean, but okay. It's really, go see it.
Listen, I will not miss it. I love great film. Yeah. Okay, so what are you proudest of?
Well, of course, I'm proudest of my sons. I'm very proud of my sons. In fact, I'll get quivery talking about it. My oldest son is a public defender in Brooklyn.
Wow.
And so he's very committed to the kind of values I've talked about, and he's following his path right now, and I'm so proud of him. My other son has taken some time to find his path. Wasn't as clear cut for him, and you know, instead of pushing him, no, go to college, do this, do that, we've really tried to let him find his way, and I think he's finding it. He's in Asheville, North Carolina. He's going back to school, but again, for all these reasons, 10 years ago, I would have been pushing him, oh, you've got to go to college right now. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. But I know he's a good man. Mm-hmm. And so I know he's got stuff that's going to make his life happy. So I'm letting him go at his own. I'm not trying to push him. I want him to go at his own speed. And oh, by the way, he would anyway, because he's now 21 years old. And then I'm proud of making this change in my life. I'm proud that I did that. And I hope, you know, just little things I do each day. In fact, right before you got on the call, in my collaborative, there's a woman through one of the agencies who's working two jobs. It's the holidays. She can't pay her electric bill. I have, through my collaborative, the ability to send an email out to like 150 different agencies, one of which might help that woman.
Wow.
And so I feel wonderful about that, you know, that because like I said, I go back to what the Margaret Mead quote is, these people who think these little things you do can't make a change, they do.
Yes.
You know? And going back, I'll tell you, one of my other favorite films for that reason is It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Because that film shows you this man thinks he's led a life of no purpose, a life where he's been a hindrance to people. And, of course, when you remove his existence, you see how pivotal his life has affected other people. So, and how pivotal his life was to the others around him. And so I think we all have to think about that when you get down and you feel like your life is meaningless, we can, just in giving a smile to the person checking you out of the grocery store,
correct,
you know, can make somebody's day. I know it's made mine before when I've been really down or unhappy and somebody's given me a big smile. You know, those little things do make a huge difference in this world.
Well, they absolutely do. Melinda Ennis, what a great pleasure being with you today. We appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey, and I know that our listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on their journeys. So how do those listeners connect with you?
My email is melindagunsense@gmail.com, and our website is gunsenseGA.org.
Good. Listeners know that they can go to Discover Talent Podcast, click on podcast, find Melinda Ennis, number 211, and the highlights of this very nice interview, as well as those links. So you can quickly get there and connect. I want to thank listeners around the world for joining us today. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the content, we'd love for you to be a subscriber. Join us, join in the conversation, and tell us how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We can't ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.